So with all that being said, I'd like to invite now someone I've spent some time with to share a message.
My name is Ajit Bukele, and I'm president of El Salvador. Great ideas are beautiful and have great power. But like most beautiful things, they can also be more fragile than we think. When I was a kid, we thought about the future and we were delighted by its possibilities. We couldn't wait for it to happen and be part of its creation. But now, ask almost anyone what they think about the future and they will say something along the lines of nuclear war, climate catastrophe, hunger, pestilence, the death of life. We didn't take care of the beautiful idea that we create our own future, that we as humanity can do almost anything that we imagine. Our ingenuity, what separates us from other species. In El Salvador, we are trying to rescue this idea and start the design of a country for the future, using the best ingredients that makes us who we are, while using sensibility to find the best examples of ideas from history and around the world. I believe Bitcoin could be one of these ideas. That is why next week, I will send to Congress a bill that will make Bitcoin a legal tender in El Salvador. In the short term, this will generate jobs and help provide financial inclusion to thousands outside the formal economy.
And in the medium long term, we hope that this small decision can help us push humanity at this time of week into the right direction. I enjoy politics to leave a legacy for my country, but while doing it, and by working with like-minded people, maybe we can help create a legacy for them.
You got me a gift. You got me a gift, a soccer jersey. It's pretty sick. I want to read my favorite part from the proposed bill. Central banks are increasingly taking actions that may cause harm to the economic stability of El Salvador. That in order to mitigate the negative impact from central banks, it becomes necessary to authorize the circulation of a digital currency with a supply that cannot be controlled by any central bank and is only altered in accord with the objective and calculable criteria.
Happy Bitcoin Tuesday, freaks. It's your boy, Matt Odell, here for another Citadel Dispatch. That intro was our fucking boy, an absolute legend, Jack Mahlers, this weekend with the president of El Salvador, announcing that El Salvador will be the first country to be making Bitcoin legal tender. This is Citadel Dispatch number 25. It's actually been 6 months straight of Bitcoin Tuesdays that we've all shared together, which is really fucking impressive. So cheers to all the ride or die who have been here in the live chat for the whole thing. Citadel Dispatch is the interactive live show about Bitcoin, distributed systems, privacy, and open source software. I'm grateful to be joined here by our boy, Evan Kaloudis, for his seventh Citadel Dispatch. What's up, Evan?
What is up, Matt? And what is up, freaks?
Let's
can't believe
go.
It's been seven episodes. Man, just shouts to you for doing such a good job and having such great guests on, facilitating such great dialogue. Just happy to be a part of it, man.
Yeah, dude, thank you. I mean, you joined us for the first episode, and here you are for the 25th, so that's pretty fucking badass. I mean, I thought I had enough of you already. I just spent the last week with you in Miami, and then here we are. We couldn't miss a Bitcoin Tuesday, freak, so we made it happen.
We're keeping the streak going like Rockstar on GitHub. You know, you got to keep those green squares going.
So, I mean, the main topic of today's discussion is going to be all this ransomware bullshit that's going on. But before we get there, I mean, obviously, I started it off with this El Salvador news. I think it's a pretty big deal. What's your take here, Evan?
Well, I think we're entering into a new era of Bitcoin where we're seeing the game theory about to play out amongst the nation states. And, you know, all the salty people may make, you know, all these offhand remarks about, I don't know, you know, El Salvador and how much money they have down there, like what they produce. Like, this is just the beginning of what's going to become like a crazy chain reaction. And, you know, it's going to start with countries in Latin America. From there, we could see countries in Africa and then Europe and Asia all going down this path. This is unprecedented, and this is really where the fun begins.
Yeah, I think people are kind of underestimating, you know, what happens next year. I mean, the FOMO can just, it kind of just works into itself. And first we had this kind of corporate FOMO start, and now we have this nation state FOMO. And it's kind of beautiful watching it happen in Latin America first. I mean, there's so many countries down there that were once powerhouses that have just completely been destroyed and gutted, and their people completely fucked. Partially because of U.S. hegemony, but also, you know, for internal political reasons. So to see them have access to this money that should be able to uplift the people and give them more sovereignty is really powerful. And I'm just excited. I'm excited to kind of see this all unfold. I mean, we've theorized for a while here that it was going to start with challenger countries. It was going to start with smaller economies. Like, obviously, it's not going to start with the big dogs. They have a lot more to lose and a lot less to gain. So watching it happen in our back door with, you know, I've traveled around South America a lot, Central America a lot, and I love the culture. The culture is fantastic. So to see this all unfold is kind of beautiful. And it's amazing how quick it went from, you know, just El Salvador to like all these different politicians in all these different countries. I mean, in a lot of, you know, I don't think there's been any other presidents that have stepped forward yet. But like random, you know, a bunch of different legislators and other things like that, I've started to step up, and they want to, you know, they want to get on the train. So it's kind of cool how quick it can unfold here.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it always was going to be out of necessity. The countries who needed it the most and who had the least to lose. And if you think about it, El Salvador has like nothing to lose here. They've not been in charge of their own destiny for a long time. You know, they've been a dollarized country. Like, they use the U.S. dollar. It's not like they have another currency that they had control of that they could, you know, inflate to help their own spending, right? They're just at the mercy of the U.S. empire and our spending and what we do. And, you know, when those stimmy checks get distributed, you know, the El Salvadorians, they're not getting one. So yeah,
they don't send them out to them.
No, they do not. So I think if anything, this is a sign of El Salvador taking control of their own destiny again.
I mean, it's
empowering. Yeah.
I mean, sorry to cut you off. I didn't mean to do that. I apologize. I mean, it's more than just, I mean, they're dollarized, so it's very obvious with them, right? But just in general, because we're the reserve currency, when we inflate our supply, we're really taxing the rest of the world more than we're taxing ourselves. I mean, obviously, we're also taxing individual citizens in terms of inflation, but the inflation first hits the non-reserve currencies that are using us as a reserve, even if they're not dollarized. It seems like Marty Zowel is just, you know, we have him in the comments. It seems like he's just got really, it seems like he wasn't humble and he's just upset with me about my 200K by conference day. And now he's just going at me. Ever since last week, he's just been going at me. So he wants you to lead the show here, Evan.
Marty Zowel, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry this happened to you. But you know, just don't overextend yourself on Matt's bullishness. There's a lesson here. You know what I mean? I personally am stoked at these low prices. Like, there's so many bullish events going on right now as the price is suppressed with all this FUD that we've been seeing between Elon and China and the ransomware and the ESG. It's like, this is Sat Stacker's paradise, freaks. Like, this is the time to extend some capital.
I like that term, Stacker's paradise.
Stacker's paradise, yes.
I just want you to know, Marty's Owl, like, unless you change your name to Evans Owl, you're officially a LARPer and a virtue signaler. So you have to actually go the, you have to go the full nine yards.
I don't think I'm ready for meme accounts.
I got sidetracked. The other thing is, so I've changed the display to mempool.space if you're watching the video feed. This is not because we dumped, even though I'm sure I'm going to get the accusations. It's because I think two episodes, 6102, who's always been a major influence on the show and a good friend, was just going at me about having the price as the ticker. So I'm trying to build like an actual dispatch specific dashboard. But until then, I think this is what we'll go with. It seems clean enough to me. It's a site I use every day. What do you think, Evan? Do you think this is a good choice for episode 25? I feel like episode 25 is like a nice influential number too. You know, it's a significant number.
Well, I am a huge mempools.space fanboy. So it was really great to meet Simon and Wiz this past week. You know, it's a great project. So I love seeing this up. However, I do wish we could have a way to display, you know, a little bit of everything. If we could have some mix of mempool, some of the stats from Clark Moody and the price, that'd be the sweet spot. So we'll see what we could whip up for future episodes. Yeah, but for now, you know, this will have to do. I think we're at about what my block clock is telling me. We're at 2,971 sats per US dollar. Kraken is telling me the US dollar price is about 33,693. I think this thing is a bit undervalued now, and I think fear is really high. If you go talk to your normie friends who are just trading, getting into shit coins, whatever, they are terrified. They do not want to be holding the bag on a leg down. So they're sold already, or they're thinking about offloading the bags. I think this is a great time to buy. And you know, I don't think a six-figure BTC is out of the cards right now.
Yeah, for this year, it's not out of the fucking cards.
Of course not. It'll probably be much higher than that. Yeah.
It's fucking crazy. It's crazy how quick people just switch. Like, people are so fucking bearish on Twitter right now. They're just so, and it's just like a couple weeks. All it takes is like a couple weeks of down days, and then now everyone's going at each other. You know, if you have any kind of commentary, people are like, "You're FUDing. You're killing us. You know, it's all over. You're a fucking idiot. You know, it's gone."
And it's just nonsensical. Like, first of all, the fundamentals haven't changed at all, right? Bitcoin's still cranking out blocks, right? You know, we're about to activate Taproot. That's going to be huge. And then all this Latin America bullishness, like how did this not change people's tunes? Like, it's really crazy to me.
It's fine by me. If you're a fiat miner, you're just stacking. Yeah. If you're just stacking every week, you're just staying humble and stacking. You know, this could easily turn into like last March, where it's like a generational opportunity to buy Bitcoin, where everybody's going to look back and they're going to be like, what the fuck, man?
Yeah. I think it's going to be like, oh, you got lucky. Everyone else was getting shaken out and you were buying at 28, 29 to 35K or whatever. I think this is definitely a sweet range. Before and I mean, it wasn't as violent down in 2017, but we still had a drawdown of like 35% or so, right? So things are still playing out. It's just a little more violent with all the focus on it from, you know, mostly state actors. So.
Well, we almost had, I mean, if I remember back, I'm not going to pull up the chart, but if I remember back, in 2017, there was like many like 30%+ drawdowns. Mm-hmm. This time around, we didn't like get any 30%+ drawdowns. And then we just got this huge big one, which kind of reminds me more of 2013. But also in my mind, it's, you know, it's like maybe we just got a little bit ahead of ourselves. You know, Tesla bought in and they kind of like jumped the gun there, and it created all this additional buy pressure. And then, you know, maybe like personalities like that Odell guy, or like saying 200K by conference day and stuff, and people just got a little bit ahead of themselves. Marty's owl came back as Evan's owl. And so like we got what we deserved, right? We got hit back, we got kicked in the balls, and it needed to clean out all the leverage and set up the stack base, right? Set up the stackers base. The stackers set the floor in my mind. And then the traders are the ones who are doing the liquidity in between, right? But if people are just constantly stacking, if we just have millions of people just stacking every time they get paid, the price is just, that floor is just like slowly rising, right?
Yeah. It's simple as that. You know, the people with conviction, the sat stackers, they set the floor. And, you know, there's the other side of it, the people who are liquidating. You know, that group of people has to be exhausted. But from what I'm hearing from my normie friends trading, I think we're getting there. I think we're really close to reaching this bottom. So fingers crossed, freaks. It's not financial advice. But, you know, if you're in this for the long haul, 4 years plus, this is an excellent time to buy.
Before we go further here, I'm just going to be a little bit shameless. The stream did fuck up in the beginning. So if you retweeted or, you know, liked on YouTube or on Twitch, I don't even know how it works on Twitch. There's a new stream now. So consider going and doing that. It is appreciated. It is the single biggest thing you could do for the show. Obviously, huge shout out to everyone who's donated to the show. I want to keep this ad free. I think that's, you know, it's fucking fantastic that it can just be supported by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners. So I appreciate all of you on that. You want to talk about Miami a little bit before we get into this ransomware thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Before we go into the weeds. Yeah, man, it was an incredible week with some incredible people. You know, it was very overwhelming at times. I think the scale of it, there's definitely people that we didn't get around to even seeing or talking to. There was countless cases of freaks saying, oh, I didn't know this person was there. Oh, I can't believe I didn't see you. Like, it was just like a little too big, you know, but at the same time, it sort of makes sense for it being the world's biggest ever Bitcoin conference. But yeah, there were some incredible talks. I particularly liked seeing Ron Paul speak. You know, it's hard not to get bullish on Bitcoin after hearing Dr. No talk so positively about it for so long. You know, there were also shenanigans too, you know, from Dogecoiners interrupting Steve Lee's talk and stripping on stage. I feel so bad for Steve Lee. He's such a sweet guy.
Brilliant dude, guy. Fucking Ryan Calder was in the backstage and just fucking ran up and bear hugged him off the stage.
Shouts to Ryan. That's a true Bitcoiner right there. I gotta lift with the guy. Learn how to pick up shitcoiners like that with so swiftly. But yeah, man, there was a lot of things, you know, to be bullish on. I think it was great all in all, despite being overwhelmed and being in this whirlwind. I honestly think the best part of the conference was the free and open source dome you helped put together, Matt. So shouts to you for that.
Yeah, it was me and Rootsall. Shout out to Rootsall for his help.
Rootsall, incredible Bitcoiner to meet. I love Raspi Blitz. I was so happy to have spent time with him. Wish we could have chatted a little more.
Well, that reminds me. Next week, Rootsall is going to be on Dispatch, along with members of the teams of Noddle, Ronin Dojo, Start9, and MyNode to discuss the different node packages and their licensing schemes, and what makes an open source license. So the only node package that is not a part of it yet is Umbral. They haven't responded to me. So if you freaks are using Umbral and you would like to see them be a part of the discussion along with all the other major node teams, consider chirping at them, reaching out to them, and asking them to be on what is hopefully one of your favorite shows.
Umbral, please join. We love your product. We want you to get your word in. If you want me to come join and moderate, I will. But it would be incomplete without y'all. But that being said, Matt, you know it's going to be a complete bloodbath.
Dude, this show is designed to be an organized bloodbath every week. That is literally That is literally the plan. Most of the people who are joining, I mean, I have jokes on Twitter right now. The third best Ben in Bitcoin, Ben the Carman, said that you should be a permanent host. I mean, when I designed the show, I said to you from the beginning, like the idea was that basically there's multiple recurring hosts, right? You being one of them. But some of these guys that are going to be on the show next week are also, I would say, would fall in that category, including Zelko, Keto Miner, and Open Arms, who will be joining us. So hopefully some of these other guys will also end up being more reoccurring as well. So I think, look, we're going to have the live chat as we always do. I'm sure they won't pull any punches. And it's a very important conversation to have. You know, people are looking at these node projects. They all have different pros and cons. And it's one of the first decisions that a ride or die freak is kind of making, right? It's like they're making like, what kind of wallets am I going to use and what kind of a node am I going to run, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of options in the space, which is great. We got a lot of competition, but it could be a little overwhelming for the average user to sort of figure out what they want. But that being said, there's a little something for everyone, depending how technical you are or not, depending if you want more of a focus on coin joining or you want Lightning or you know, the ability to install a whole bunch of apps. I think there's a solution for everyone. And, you know, this is a very important thing that people take control of their own destinies, run their own nodes, and become first-class citizens in Bitcoin. So the more people we onboard to setups like this, the merrier. And, you know, the more we're all going to benefit.
We have Ride or Die Freak, who was on the show last week, Anthony, saying he wouldn't go with a node package that doesn't join the chat next week, considering... so go out and tell your favorite node packages that you feel the same way, and let's hope that we get them all on the show. And then we have FTB asking why I said no market buy during RHR. I said consider stacking, but instead of just telling people to do it, because I learned my lesson, and in hindsight, it actually, you know, they got a better price if they waited till now. But I mean, look, guys, it's all fun and games. I hope I kind of feel bad after the fact about the whole 200K by conference day thing. I got caught up in a little bit. A lot of it was like a meme. It was like meant to be a meme. And then I just dug into it, you know, because everyone was doing like the Sailor 100K parties. And like Scott Minard from Guggenheim was like 400K. And I was just, you know, I wanted to jump into it. It was just fun. It was like a troll on like the engagement accounts on Twitter. And I had just gone all caps. It was like early February. I look back, it was like early February. So it was like we were at 2830 and we went up to like 65K. And then, you know, you guys know the rest. I have Cantillon John saying I wasn't humble. That is correct. To be clear, I am rarely humble. That is why I repeat it so often that not only should you guys stay humble, but I should stay humble. But to be absolutely clear, I have more Bitcoin than I had when I made the 200K by conference day prediction. So it might sound like cope, but when I say humble, the first and foremost thing I mean is, you know, hold your own keys, care about your privacy, don't use leverage. That's like the humility that matters arguably the most in Bitcoin land. Because if you're not humble in that regard, then you lose all your Bitcoin on March 12th. If you're not humble in that regard, you lose all your Bitcoin on whenever the most recent dump happened. And that day, like all the shit coins went down like 95% or something. In Bitcoin land, that's the most important humility. And I actually get shit on the other side when people say, Matt, I don't want to be humble when Bitcoin's pumping, I want to dunk on the shit corners. Yeah, that doesn't preclude that. You're allowed to dunk on the shit corners. Just don't take out leverage. You know, like...
don't overextend yourself.
Exactly. And we have Evans Owl in here saying Matt is so humble. So I appreciate the hard critique, Evan. Thank you, Evans Owl. Thank you for that.
Yeah. And believe me, freaks, we gave him so much flack this past week. He's heard it enough.
Yeah. It was like every day in the Airbnb at like 2 a.m, I was just 200K by conference days.
I mean, that's why we got such a nice place to begin with. We're like rationalizing. It's like, oh, yeah, it will be 200K. So whatever.
I went to Marty's hotel on Sunday and I was like, I was like, oh, dude, you believed it too, didn't you? So nice.
Sweet.
Well, anyway, guys, I guess that was a lesson for us all. You know, this is Bitcoin tends to teach you a lesson if you get a little bit too cocky. So, okay, well, that was great. I mean, the best part about Miami was Ross's interview, the first interview he's ever done since he's been put in his cage. It was an extremely moving interview. I'd be lying if I said that I didn't have tears in my eyes. Everyone should go listen to that. I do have it on my Twitter page if you can't find it, but it's on Bitcoin Magazine's YouTube. Literally every single Bitcoiner needs to go listen to that. And then second of all, like, it was just so fantastic meeting so many freaks and fellow Bitcoiners and people I've interacted with only online. You really start to realize how powerful this movement is when you meet with so many like-minded folks. And I really do, like, it just furthers your conviction, you know, it just furthers your conviction that for better or worse, like, we're going to win this thing and we're going to make the world a better place. And ultimately, that mission is bigger than any of us individuals. It's bigger than ourselves.
Who's the favorite person you met this past week?
Oof. I don't know. Bitcoiners are just so fantastic that it's too hard to choose. Who's the favorite person you've met this week, Evan?
Oh, man. There were a lot, man. Hanging with Wiz at the Airbnb was great. He's an incredible Bitcoiner. Rootsol, of course. You know, Raspi Blitz helped kick off Zeus, essentially, so it was amazing seeing him. Oh, man. Adam Curry, when he came to the FOSS Dome, I got to talk to him. And he pulled out his phone and he showed me he was using Zeus.
Oh, that's so like, cool.
That was like, oh man, okay. Now I understand this. This is what I'm doing it for, you know? Like, people actually using your software feels amazing. Yeah, man, there was countless ones. It's hard to even say. It's a loaded question to even ask one. Like, Russ Okung, that was really cool talking to him at Beefsteak. Will Reeves at Beefsteak too. I feel so bad. I was giving him such a hard time about the fold spin rewards.
Did you do it in person too?
That guy. What'd you say?
Did you do it in person too?
Oh yeah. No. We were at the bar in the back at Beefsteak, which freaks. Okay. Beefsteak was probably the best event all week. Like,
it's always the best event. Russ Okung is a fucking legend. We are so lucky to have him on the athlete side. Like, he's going to fucking orange pill so many fucking athletes. Ask for a better ambassador. He's a fucking real one, man.
He gets it, that guy.
Yeah, but so. Beefsteak was fucking legendary. Every Beefsteak is the best, you know, one of the best events of wherever you are, whether that's Austin BitDevs or a different conference, BitBlock Boom or something like that. But This one was absolutely insane. It was the largest one he's ever thrown. You know, we had NFL players there. We had Senator Loomis was eating steak with her hands at a Bitcoin Beefsteak.
I didn't even get to talk to her. This one was, it was so, the biggest one by far. It's like so many people I didn't even get around to saying hi to. It was crazy. But the venue was incredible too. Like, it was some converted strip club. It was out of control. There was like a cockpit from a plane that was up this like staircase that you could stick your head out of. We'll post some pictures of that too. And yeah, the food was incredible as always.
One of our favorite core devs and friend of the podcast, James O'Byrne, DJing.
Oh, James was killing it. We were dancing. We got so drunk. We were dancing on the dance floor. It was amazing.
We got kicked out at closing. I think they kicked us out at like 2 a.m.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We went to like 1:30 and then we load up. We're so drunk. We're going into the Uber, right? I get into the back seat and I don't even realize who we're with. We're with Gigi. And I start.
Oh, I fucking love Gigi, man. But I met him already, and he's already a good friend, but it was so good to see him again.
Oh, man. He's great. Love him and his work. So yeah, it was just so overwhelming. It was literally a whirlwind.
Gigi slept on our couch that night, right?
Yeah, I brought him some water to try to revive him in the morning.
Like, you know, it's a good night when you wake up the next morning and Gigi's on your couch.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, no, that was just, there were so many good people that like you couldn't walk. You'd walk like 3 feet and then you get stuck in another amazing conversation. Like you literally
pulled out of one convo, pulled into the next. Like you were never really, at least for me, I felt like I was never really in control of what I was going to be doing there. But it worked out nicely and we had a blast. So freaks, next time there's a beefsteak, you definitely need to sign up and come and say hi. It was legendary, Braj. Like that's the word I would use. It was legendary.
You always when you have a chance to go to a beefsteak, just always go to the beefsteak. Like don't hesitate. It'll get sold out before you. Oh, me and everyone were talking about how we're such dicks when the tweet goes out, we don't retweet right away. And like it gets no engagement because everyone who sees the tweets like, oh, we need to get our tickets. Like everyone needs to get their tickets. Got to send it to your friends and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. You retweet it after you secure your ticket.
Yeah, you secure the tickets and then you retweet. It's like on the plane where you put the mask on your face before you put it on the aisle next to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, that's great. Yeah, that was fucking awesome. So let's jump into this ransomware thing. It's on the news. Everyone's saying that Bitcoin's broken. The FBI can break into Bitcoin. FUD everywhere. FUD abounds. Feels like Bitcoin is being FUD attacked. That's not a great place to start with. Let's start with the fact that the Colonial Pipeline got ransomware attacked. What was it like 4 weeks ago or something like that? Mm-hmm. We got a picture of the Colonial Pipeline on if you're on the video feed, freaks. We've talked about it a bunch on both podcasts, both on Dispatch and RHR. So I don't want to go too much into the details of this particular attack, but the basics is that this popular ransomware as a service software, DarkSide, was used to lock up, the account management services of Colonial Pipeline, which runs up the East Coast and services most of the East Coast's supply needs, energy supply needs. And as a result, there was gas shortages. There was all this concern, major infrastructure of the United States. The Biden administration, I think, declared like ransomware equivalent to terrorism. They said it was an act of war. They said all these things about that they thought Russia was about behind it or like a Russian gang. Then there was like all this weirdness that happened immediately following it where like DarkSide said that they were closing up shop and they didn't vet their clients well enough. I mean, DarkSide is this new idea, this ransomware as a service. So the idea is that the dev team behind DarkSide doesn't actually attack. They don't actually attack the different clients. They give you access to the software. And if you use the software on a client, they just take a 15% fee off the top. And I guess they take also a flat fee. They probably take a flat fee as payment to get the software to begin with. And then they take a percentage off the top of any ransomware you get paid. So DarkSide came out and said, you know, we didn't mean to do any kind of geopolitical warfare. We usually just attack soft targets like hospitals and small businesses and banks and police stations. Not large infrastructure projects, and that we'll vet our clients better going forward, which is just kind of a hilarious statement from a hacking group in Russia to be releasing. And then like a day or two after that, sorry, freaks, my timeline's a little bit off, but this is, you know, for the most part should be correct. A couple of days after that, they said all of their servers had been seized and that they were just going out of business. Which a lot of us believed, and I still kind of believe, was like a boating accident claim, right? We're going out of business, and then they just come out as like, all of a sudden, like in 2 months, there's a light-sided malware or something. Just to like take some of the geopolitical pressure off of themselves. And then yesterday, the Department of Justice announced that they seized 63.7 Bitcoin. That was the ransom was... It was the affiliate portion of the ransom that was paid, the opposite affiliate, the client's portion of the ransom that was paid. So not that 15% that goes to the DarkSide devs. It was the 85% that goes to whoever was the one who executed the ransom. And they said they didn't give us that many details, but they said they tracked it down and then they secured the private key. And So where do you want to start here, Evan?
It's just a tragedy that ECDSA is broken now. You know, we gotta abandon Bitcoin.
FUD is abound. I think we shouldn't start with sarcasm. We have a lot of new users. I assume some of them were scared by the FUD that Bitcoin addresses could be attacked. I would just say, just straight up to the new users, no one can crack a Bitcoin private key. And if they could, they're not going to test it out with fucking $2 million. Like, there's a lot more Bitcoin that they could take than 63 Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Matt. There's much bigger fish to fry and bigger bounties to plunder than that. So, I mean, it's just hysteria. It's just the FBI also trying to do some PR and overstate their abilities. Like, it's a mix of all these different things. It's people not understanding what actually transpired. It's, minimal facts being presented by the DOJ and FBI and people, conflating things and trying to piece together things in their heads. But realistically, this is just sounds like there was one piece of infrastructure up on maybe AWS's cloud or someone hosting infrastructure in Northern California. And they were able to track this infrastructure back, and they were just holding the key hot on the server. It's sort of mind-boggling, you know? If anything, the takeaway is, like, these guys were not listening to RHR and TFTC and taking control of their own keys and putting it into cold storage.
So we know the dark side gang, they're not plebs.
They're definitely not plebs.
So let's just pull it back for a second. So when it comes to seizing Bitcoin, you're not going to be able to crack the private key. So the MO is you first try and trace the Bitcoin. If it's a KYC payment, obviously it's attached to your identity. So you're forced to try and break a link there. With ransomware, it's actually kind of similar to a KYC type of situation, because in this situation, Colonial Pipeline paid the ransom. They immediately told the FBI, we paid this ransom to this address, right? And I have up on the screen, I have Ergo's tracking of the funds going through. So you track the funds first, right? And once you track the funds, you try and figure out where the addresses are located, right? So you want to figure out the owner. If you can figure out the owner, then you can pressure the owner, whether that's if you're a gang member or something, you're trying to hold the gun to someone's head or break their kneecaps or threaten their kids, their loved ones. But with the U.S. government, we have the largest prison system in the world. We could take your assets. We could cruise missile your ass. There's a bunch of things the U.S. government can do to pressure an owner to try and get access.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't know the owner and they can't pressure the owner, they can try and attempt to get the private keys because they're on an internet connected device, whether that's a home computer or a server. Obviously, it's easier if it's a cloud server, especially if it's in something like AWS, like we think it was, where it's in like a corporate cloud and you can just give Amazon a subpoena and take it, right? And then last but not least, if it's on an exchange or a custodial wallet, then the service provider actually holds a private key. The user doesn't, right? So if the user doesn't hold a private key, then you go and you pressure the exchange or service and you take it from them. That's the general premise of how you would go about seizing Bitcoin. You're not actually breaking the protocol. You're attacking essentially the human element behind holding the private keys. And first, it's a trace and then it's an attack. Would you say that's like a general premise that we're dealing with here?
Yeah, absolutely. The crux of the issue is these ransomware actors were trusting third-party infrastructure for even holding their keys, which should be a big no-no. I mean, they may have had access to the keys through the Bitcoin client on there, but they were hosting it on someone else's box who just went in there, shelled in for the FBI, ripped that key off, and took all the funds, at least from what my understanding is.
So there's so I have this Ergo thing up. He also has a thread, and the thread makes an interesting point. So there's a consolidation that happened, which you can see, on the right side, this rightermost circle cluster, and that's what creates the cluster. So they broke a privacy best practice, and they took a bunch of inputs. The attackers, the hackers took a bunch of inputs, and they combined them all into a single, I think, a 69 Bitcoin UTXO. And by doing that, they link common ownership. And what Ergo speculates is that by linking that common ownership, the FBI or their chain analysis partners were able to then figure out the ultimate address that the funds were in, because the user was using an Electrum Lite client. This is just this is his speculation, was using an Electrum Lite client and was connected to like a chain analysis node. If you know, there's a lot of times there's been speculation that these surveillance companies are running Electrum nodes. So if you're not using your own Electrum node, you're using someone else's Electrum node. Mm-hmm. And as a result, those addresses that are not linked on chain are still linked via that way. And they have an IP address linked to it. And when they had the IP address linked to it, they had the server linked to it. And when they had the server linked to it, they were able to then hit the server, right? So they have the address information, then they combine it with something like Electrum, and they're able to like figure out where the server is and then hit the server. So there's two elements at play here, right? It's on-chain privacy and network-level privacy, which are the two things that we talk about a ton on this show.
Mm-hmm.
And then last but not least, this is coming back to actionable discussion, right? Last but not least, the keys were hot. So you had the keys hot, you had poor on-chain privacy, and you had poor network-level privacy. And it seems like it was multi-sig. It was multi-sig, but both multi-sig keys were hot, so that didn't help.
Yeah, I mean, as bad as it gets. I mean, I guess it could be worse, but if you're going to be using multi-sig, like, what's the point of having it on hot devices to begin with? So,
You use multi-sig on hot devices when you use Lightning, Evan.
That's true, but no one should be accepting ransomware payments on Lightning. Although I expect someone might try one day. It's definitely not the way to go, at least today.
Do you think, I'm just going to come out and say this. Oh no, before we do, the number one thing about ransomware, and a lot of people are going to try and pigeonhole Bitcoin on this is not Bitcoin's fault. These are insecure systems that are going to be attacked anyway. If anything, ransomware allows an incentive for an attacker to publicize that they've attacked you by encrypting all your shit, rather than just selling your information to the highest bidder or selling that access to the highest bidder. Ultimately, the cat's out of the bag, whether it's Bitcoin or something else, payments will be made on the internet in a censorship-resistant fashion. And what you need to do is improve your infrastructure. There should be a major play in America to realize it's a national security issue to improve our infrastructure and to make sure our companies are protected and to make sure our public infrastructure is protected. And if it's not protected, these attacks are just going to keep on happening until people protect them. And I'll tell you one thing. Every single time one of these providers gets attacked and, you know, ends up having to pay money and loses a ton of business, they will never let it happen again. They will spend a ton of fucking money and time to make sure that their systems are secure going forward. They just need to touch the stove and get hurt.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the reasons I brought Evan on is because you were like, this was your industry, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I worked in cyber for 6 years. And frankly, I see this as being a boom for cybersecurity. The fact that you're able to monetize a hack so easily is going to light a fire under the entire industry's ass. And that's what we're seeing. We're going to see people, not only build tools to try to help counter these things and have more, rigorous backups mechanisms, but it's also just going to incentivize people that just have better security in general to build up systems that will detect these things, to, alert on them. If things are happening more frequently and your expected costs of what you're going to endure from cyber hacks is going up year after year because this thing becomes more rampant, then the whole cybersecurity industry is about to experience a whole boom. I think this is going to be ultimately great for the industry. and ultimately great for people's security. People need to be rigorous now just because of how easy it is and how, where the incentives are aligned. So that's one of the bigger points I wanted to bring home from this thing. Like, this is going to be a boom for the cyber industry.
And what's really interesting, it goes across like the whole economy, because it goes from, like, you know, these larger ransomware payments of fucking full nation pipeline. And then there's small businesses all over the place. Like, these, like, you don't hear about the majority of ransomware attacks. You know, I had a family friend who, like, their small accounting business got hit with a $3,000 ransom because these criminals are savvy. They realize, like, if they hit the smaller low hanging fruit, they need to pick an amount that they'll actually pay. Otherwise, they'll just start from scratch. they just won't pay the ransom. So it's just really interesting that it's like cybersecurity professionals have been talking about, you know, securing your systems for the last 30 years or whatever. And everyone just kind of gave it lip service. No one was really doing anything until all of a sudden there's this direct incentive to make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. You just got to, when you're doing your threat calculation, right, and you're thinking like, okay, how much damage this could potentially do to my enterprise, and you multiply by the likeliness of it happening. Well, if it's becoming more and more likely, like, everyone needs to take this into their calculations. More and more people are going to have to spend more money on cybersecurity protection. So it's definitely going to be a boom for the industry. It's a shame that this is what it took for things to start changing and people to start taking things more seriously. But, you know, like many other instances in this industry, lessons are often learned the hard way.
And then, exactly. Lessons are learned the hard way. And that's what I was saying. So the other thing that it kind of is funny is, like, these companies historically have paid bounties. A lot of these big companies have paid bounties out for security researchers. You find a bug, you know, we'll give you $10,000 or something. we have Vanilla in the chat trying to figure out how to rewind. I'm pretty sure you can rewind on YouTube. I don't know if you can rewind live on Twitch. You definitely can't do it live via Twitter. But anyway, this is all going to get posted to the podcast feed. It's going to get posted onto BitcoinTV.com. There's full archives. You can download it. You can torrent it. This is an open project in the spirit of FOSS. And I want you guys to seed it. I want you to rip it up. I want you to share it. I want you to do whatever the hell you want to do with it. And all those links are available at CitadelDispatch.com. And that's where you can also contribute to the show. But anyway, my point was that they had these bounties, and it just goes to show, you know, how shitty their bounties were. You know, like, there's such low numbers. And in this case, basically, the security researchers, like, the kind way of calling a ransomware gang is they're basically distributed security researchers. they get to set the price of their bounty, and there's like a negotiation if it's paid or not.
What an incredible price discovery tool.
So with all that said, I mean, I'm just going to jump right in here. Do you think this was a real ransomware attack, or do you think it was a false flag perpetrated by the US government?
Oh, wow. Really getting into it, Matt. All right. So, okay. First of all, you know, we really don't know for sure, right? So the motto is don't trust, verify. And unfortunately, it's really hard to verify any claims from anyone right now. We know that there's some crazy things that have come out from journalists reporting on this. I think Kim Zetter said that this attack didn't actually affect the distribution systems, the technical systems, but actually came down to infecting the billing systems, and that the company, the pipeline, shut everything down because they weren't sure how they would bill their customers, which, if so, is absolutely disgusting and goes to show you can't trust corporations. Is the government telling the truth here in this story? We don't really know. I mean, the FBI has a long track record of creating its own terrorist plots, then coming in as the good guy and stopping them. So could they be involved? I don't know. Shit, who knows for sure? But what I do know is that at the end of the day, this whole thing is actually great for Bitcoin, because everything's good for Bitcoin. But specifically, when you have the FBI coming out and saying, okay, guys, you should pay these ransoms, like just pay them, like, and using this as an example of like, okay, this is how we can get your money back or whatever. I think we're going to see more companies just paying these things straight up. And I don't know what the FBI's angle is behind that. Is it they just don't want, you know, critical infrastructure to be down because the companies are trying to be cheap asses? That's probably what it comes down to. But ultimately, I think, you know, boards across the country of these major corporations are seeing what happened. They're coming up with plans to how to mitigate this. I'm sure many are thinking about having Bitcoin in the reserves just in case this does happen, to get back on their feet as soon as possible. It's just coming into the minds of all these people that may have not have been thinking about cryptocurrency at all before. And even if the connotation is bad in the light of hacking, you know, exposure, no matter what your no matter what the purpose, is always a good thing for Bitcoin. So I think this is in itself is bullish news.
I think that was a very insightful answer. It's nice and nuanced with zero concrete reply, which is a very professional answer. We have Ride or Die Freak Randy McMillan in the live chat mentioning insurance scam. I mean, I don't think this was necessarily insurance scam, but as this ransomware attacks start becoming more and more common, and these operators, the CEOs of the companies and the treasuries of the companies become more savvy, it could definitely be a vector. I mean, I know there is already ransomware insurance. So, I mean, that's up to the insurance companies to try and figure out how they're going to deal with that kind of fraud. That's fraud like any other. I would just say that insurance companies tend to fuck over their clients as much as possible. So I'm not going to shed a tear there. I don't think this was an insurance scam. I think this company, Colonial Pipeline, just had horrible infrastructure. They were probably running like Windows 95 or some shit. They wanted sympathy from the government and from their clients because they couldn't accept payments. So they just shut down everything because they were fucking greedy. Which, you know, runs logically. The U.S. government was able to actually catch these guys, probably partially because they used, you know, executive privilege by saying that it was a terrorist attack. So they were able to, you know, get more power than they could otherwise. And then they obviously, in proper DOJ fashion, they used it to attack Bitcoin afterwards. You know,
never
taking
let
advantage
a crisis go to waste, as they say.
Right. Yeah. Taking advantage of a real attack makes complete sense. To me, if it was going to be a false flag, they wouldn't have recovered the Bitcoin and the pipeline would still be shut down. So, you know, if it was a false flag, it was a very weak false flag. And if you believe that our infrastructure is secure, I got a shitcoin to sell you.
Yeah, I mean, too many things are just connected out of convenience and laziness and cost cutting. You know, like these things don't have to be online at all, but it's just they become complacent. It's easy. It's you know, cheaper than having more operators, more employees operate things manually. And yeah, it's sort of hard to unwind all that stuff.
But I mean, I expect there to be more ransomware attacks. I expect the majority of the funds not to get recovered. I expect future ransomware attackers to learn from the mistakes of these attackers and practice better privacy, best practices, and better OPSEC in general, right? In terms of how they store their keys. And I don't think this is stopping anytime soon. And what one other interesting aspect of here, by the way, is that this ransomware specifically, I have it up on the screen. This is not the one of the Colonial attack. The thing is, when DarkSide attacks an organization, most of the time the organization just pays and just doesn't say anything to the public because it just looks bad. Mm-hmm. So they never admit it. But every once in a while, you get information out of it. So the majority, it's almost like a rape victim. Like the majority of times it happens, you just don't even hear about it because they're ashamed about it. But sometimes it happens and we're able to glean certain knowledge from it. And Krebs on Security has a whole post about DarkSide based on one of the large attacks that happened and the company actually coming out and publicly releasing all the information because they wanted it to be out there. And as you can see on the screen, they actually offer a 20% discount if you pay with Monero. So for better or worse, you know, the operators understand that one of their weak points is actually trying to prevent the tracing of the Bitcoin.
Yeah, that was definitely something interesting to observe. You know, they were willing to pay the premium to have some assurance that they could track this thing on chain. And, you know, from the side of things, I mean, we don't know exactly what led the servers to be discovered, but one would think that the on-chain lack of privacy was helpful in the industry. Well,
so there's another theory I saw. So we're just all speculating at this point, freaks, because the FBI is intentionally not telling us everything. There's a theory I saw, and we just recently, it came out today, that the FBI for 2 years was running an encrypted phone network called Anom. And they went into gangs, like organized crimes, distribution networks, and they were able to get the phones into the hands of distributors, and the distributors were giving them to mobsters. And every single message was automatically getting CC'd to the FBI, and they had a backdoor key to it. So they saw every single message that went through this network for 2 years, and they literally operated the whole thing. It wasn't like they compelled the company or something. They were just literally operating an encrypted chat network. They sold it to organized criminals, and they got them on everything. And so one theory is, you know, in the affidavit or whatever, it says, you know, the Bitcoin was sent to this address, and we had the private key to that address, so we seized it. They might have sent it to a custodial mixer, and that custodial mixer could have been operated by the FBI. I mean, the freaks on Twitter don't realize, like, the majority of private Bitcoin usage, even today, I mean, it's hard to calculate for sure, isn't really the CoinJoin tools, the non-custodial CoinJoin tools. The majority has historically, and I believe still to this day, have been these custodial mixers where you're just trusting the operator. You send them Bitcoin, and they send you someone else's Bitcoin after a certain amount of time. So maybe, you know, these guys just sent it into a custodial mixer, and the custodial mixer was like, thank you very much.
Could definitely be the case. I mean, I think the takeaway here is, you know, trusted third parties are security holes, of course, right? And if you can't verify the software that's running on your device and all the software you're running, you know, it's prime territory for a honeypot. And, you know, that's what this FBI global sting was. And, you know, it's bore a lot of fruit for them. It was brilliant, you know, like, this is going to be something they're going to tell their bosses. They're going to think it's a grand slam. And it was. They were able to arrest so many people. And they were able to run this thing for years without anyone knowing. But, you know, when you're just running software you can't verify on servers run by someone else, what else do you expect?
Well, to be clear here, it appears they're still operating, that they haven't caught the actual guys. This is, first of all, the funds they took is of the affiliate. And it doesn't. We're not even sure if they caught the affiliate either. If they actually caught the people, it seems like they just got the funds. So I wouldn't say that they're, you know, done operating. I expect this specific group to keep operating, but obviously, still ransomware groups in general are going to be operating. We have some person. By the way, dude, your name, some person on YouTube, makes me sound like an asshole every time I call you out on the show because it looks like I'm just ignoring your name. But his real name on. His NIM on YouTube is some person. He's asking, why are custodial mixers still a thing? And it's twofold. Actually, it's threefold. A lot of times they're cheaper than using the CoinJoin tools. They're way easier to use with less gotchas. And number two and three, it has a asterisk next to it. With less gotchas, easier to use. And on-chain privacy is better. But with two and three, that's if you trust the provider. It's custodial privacy, right? So if you trust the provider and the provider isn't keeping logs and isn't actually the FBI waiting for you to send in your money, they're way easier to use. And on chain, it's perfect. It's like not perfect privacy, but it completely breaks the link on chain. It's not visible on chain. Like you send your Bitcoin in, they send you some other Bitcoin. There's no link because the link is them sending you someone else's Bitcoin, and that happens off chain.
Yeah. So I'll just say it from the outside observer, but the inside server has everything.
Yeah. So he just apologized. You don't have to apologize, dude. You can keep your name if you want. I appreciate you coming into live chat all the time. He just apologized because his name is some person.
Quit apologizing, freaks. Come on.
So and so what a lot of people do, or historically what a lot of people did, is if you don't trust, and so you have custodial risk. So not only are you trusting them with your privacy, obviously you're trusting them with your money.
Risk them just
they could steal your money. So what a lot of people do on the trusting with them on the privacy side is they'll chain them together, right? So they'll go from one custodial mixer to the next custodial mixer. So then all of a sudden you're mostly just trusting them with actually stealing your funds. You're less so trusting them with the privacy side, because if you go from mixer to mixer, they don't have all the information, right?
Yeah. I mean, when you're using like a traditional coin join, like you don't have as much opacity. So someone could guess like, okay, Matt is one in these 5, 10, 100 people, right? Whereas on-chain for this custodial mixer, it's just completely opaque. But however, if that person is a honeypot or the FBI, they have the entire recipe for what input came in, who did we send it out to, et cetera. It's like they have the exact answer sheet. Whereas, you know, a non-custodial mixer, as long as the mixing is sound, the strategy for it, like they don't know anything really.
And if you didn't use Tor or VPN, they'll have your IP address too.
Yep, of course.
It's kind of a similar risk to a VPN in general. It's like a custodial privacy risk.
Yeah, of course. You know, you're trusting that VPN provider with all the sites you went to, what IP you're coming from. That's a great analogy.
Yeah, like you freaks can give me shit about 200K by conference day, but what'll really kick me in the balls is if Molvad.net turns into a honeypot, because I've been recommending it to you freaks for years now. But yeah, so I think that was a pretty good overall view of the custodial mixers we went into there. Oh, so I have another question for you. Do you expect that either these ransomware providers switch to a Monero-only model or change their premium structure? So right now it seems like they're pricing it at 20%, 20% additional cost or risk if you use Bitcoin. Do you think that number goes up, or do you think they just switch over to Monero completely, or is this just a dumb question?
I think that, you know, operationally it would probably be better to just switch to Monero, but at the same time, it's a little harder to procure, especially if it's like a large corporation getting as much. They might not have exposure to the exchanges that have Monero. So I see that premium sticking around, maybe increasing. But, you know, if anything, I think people are going to change their security postures what they do with the private keys more than anything. I mean, that's what makes the most sense to me, at least, right? Like, why cut off the potential of it being paid if a corporation only wants it in BTC, especially if the FBI is going and saying, oh, hey, look, we could sort of recover it in BTC. You know, like, why remove that and the premium, right? Why not just fix the way you're storing your keys? Like, it's ridiculous.
Right. So let's jump into that. That was the next place I was going with this. Evan, is there not a use case for hot wallets?
Is there not a use case for hot wallets? Of course there's a use case for hot wallets, right? What are you talking about, bro?
Is Zeus a cold wallet?
No, Zeus, your node on the at home, that's a hot wallet. Lightning's a hot wallet right now. I mean, it always will be, right? Because their state that has to be maintained and passed around on the gossip network, right?
When I tweeted that out, I had two different types of people. I had the people that were saying that I was FUDing Lightning, and then I had the people that were saying, wait, Lightning's a hot wallet. So I was very happy that I tweeted it out.
Well, you know, anytime you could educate someone, that's always good. But come on, Matt, you know that was bait, that tweet.
You know, it was half bait, half, you know, trying to provoke a conversation here, right? Because it seems that there's been a large argument on a large contingent of Bitcoin Twitter that say the most unrealistic part of this whole exercise is that this group was using a a corporate server. It appears they were using a corporate server. That's if the custodial mixer theory isn't correct, which I still think is a really cool theory. And just like a, like they must have had such an all fuck moment when they sent it in. But that's besides the point. There's this idea that because they were using a hot wallet, that's unrealistic. Like a shit ton of people in this space use hot wallets. I mean, every centralized exchange has a hot wallet. The whole Lightning Network's hot wallet. Any freak who has used CoinJoin is inherently using a hot wallet because it needs to coordinate with each other. If you're running Whirlpool or Join Market 24/7, you're using a hot wallet. The easiest way to do that with high performance on whether that's Lightning or CoinJoin or whatnot is to use a well-connected server. You know, we had the guy who lost 1,000 coins on Electrum. He was using a hot wallet and he clicked the phishing link.
That's right.
This idea that people aren't using hot wallets, while, you know, should be educated that people should try and use cold storage when possible, but it's a calculated risk, right? We have Anthony in the comments saying he's a hot wallet. We saw him in Miami. He was very hot all the time. In Miami, you have to take 3 showers a day. You have no choice. It's a calculated risk. Like if these hackers are, bringing in 6,000 Bitcoin every 2 years, who the fuck cares if 60 Bitcoin gets seized because it's on a hot wallet?
Yeah, that's true. But at the same time, you know, it's not really a high cost to get it into a cold setup. I think it's like more of an education issue, right? It's got to be. You know, we as great as the show is, for example, right? We only got like 200 people listening on average, at least on the restream over here, right? So I think despite people, you know, having technical ability and being good at cyber and even being able to facilitate great things like this, you know, people's general knowledge about Bitcoin is lacking. The freaks are like the 0.01%.
Just to be clear, the significant majority of the freaks coming through the podcast feeds, over 20,000 will listen to this episode most likely. But yeah, I agree. We're definitely still early days. We're absolutely early days.
Early.
A lot of times it's a convenience thing, right? You just, the real question about using a server to me is not necessarily the hot wallet is, and I guess if you're an organized crime, it's probably not that hard, but most of these servers require some kind of KYC to use a corporate server. But I guess if you're an organized crime, you can get fake identities, stolen identities relatively easily.
Yeah, definitely.
My point wasn't to FUD Lightning. No one talks about the fact that Lightning uses a hot wallet, that Lightning uses hot wallets. Nobody is hyperbolic. Few people talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we're fine with that. And if we're correct about Lightning, there's going to be like billions of dollars on hot wallets.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Definitely.
And the routing nodes are going to have millions of dollars on each routing node.
Yeah, they're going to be targets, man. Like it's they need to be secure. There needs to be measures to mitigate all this sort of risk. Keys need to be held on infrastructure that the routers own. You know, there's a lot of challenges in doing this stuff, especially as the big corporations and enterprise operations come into the game. Like it's not just like setting up. It's not as easy as setting up a BTC Pay and just plugging in an Xpub. You know what I mean? Like this is something that you actively have to maintain. You got to maintain the state and make sure you don't get hacked.
Yeah, it's even worse than just a regular hot wallet.
Yeah, absolutely. The challenge that this requires is the reason why we don't see exchanges have Lightning yet. It's the reason like you don't see Lightning integrated on Cash App yet. You know what I mean? Like there's a lot of boxes to tick to make sure that your setup is secure generally, especially when you're serving, you know, potentially millions of customers. So it's not easy.
Agreed. Do you see Whirlpool unspent capacity is ticking on up?
Hell yeah. You'll love to see it. Schmelting sats.
But that's a perfect example, right? Like if you want to sit in that remixing pool, you want it running 24/7, that's a calculated risk you're taking. I think can be worth it, but it's a risk that you should calculate in your head and do accordingly, right? Like it shouldn't be all your funds at once.
Absolutely. I mean, definitely it's a different situation when you're doing something like Whirlpool or setting up Lightning at home, especially if you're just not exposed to the PlayNet web and it's just over Tor services. You know, providing your machine is getting the updates, like your odds are really low of something catastrophic happen. But still, something could happen. You could have a loss that you can't recover from. And that's why anytime you use any of these services and use a hot wallet, you need to measure the amount that you're putting in appropriately. You do not want the vast majority of your funds, like your savings, your life savings, on one of these hot wallets, right? That's why I think the analogy of checking account versus savings account is so perfect. It's like you don't want everything in your checking account.
So my lady wants some person to know that you're her favorite NIM and that you shouldn't change your NIM.
It's good. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of like on iPods when you had like unknown artists or various artists, you know, everything would just get put there. You know, you can't search for that Google phrase. You know what I mean? Some person is not going to turn up any results, or well, it'll turn up like billions of results. So yeah, some person, great way to not get found.
Or like one of the OGs, he changed his legal name to Nobody. So him, and then I think there was like someone's name was Null and it like broke a bunch of systems. Which was pretty
that, have you ever seen that XKCD comic where the guy names his kid Drop Tables? And he like through school database. That's it. Little Tommy Tables.
There we go.
That's good OPSEC freaks.
Smelting sats, you mentioned, and some person called it out. I mean, the reason we say smelting sats is because when you smelt gold, you're really creating, if you take 5 gold bars and you put it all together, and then you pour 5 new gold bars, you basically have 5 new UTXOs. I think it's a way better analogy than mixing. I really don't think CoinJoin is mixing. And I don't think it's just semantics, even though the semantics do help us because mixing has a negative connotation and custodial mixers there's some precedence of them being deemed illegal. But it's a batch Bitcoin send transaction. And really at the end of the day, if you're using a proper implementation, you're getting 5 new UTXOs with no discernible history. So it's way more similar. It's way more similar to melting 5 gold coins together and creating 5 new gold coins than it is just shuffling the 5 coins between each other. Right.
Absolutely. It's definitely better than just a shuffle mix where, you know, maybe you're taking private keys and moving them around to someone else. Like, no, those 5 coins could have come from each of those 5 coins could have come from any one of the incoming 5 coins. So yeah, it's definitely not a shuffle.
So Evan, did you intentionally remove your name? You think it's like a good OPSEC for you?
Did I remove my name from what?
From the bottom of your thing. It doesn't show your name anymore. It just says my name.
Oh man, Matt, there's definitely a difference between the guest software and the host software because I'm still seeing my name, man.
Okay, well, someone asked who was the guest, so maybe I'm just...
Listen, my OPSEC is already caked as far as who I am.
Yeah, dude, especially after this fucking week. We met so many Bitcoiners.
Oh man, yeah, for sure. I bet my phone is compromised, my computer... But it's all good, Matt, because we already operate under the assumption that all our devices are pwned. So who cares?
Exactly, as you should. And that's, you know, probably what the ransomware guys should have done as well, in hindsight. So, I mean, we wanted to keep this on the shorter end because we're both, we're kind of both in Bitcoin detox. You know, it's just been just a marathon. So I expect this to be one of the shorter dispatches, but I hope it was high signal. But before we do, there was 2 topics that I really wanted to hit. We already hit the encrypted phone network, ANOM, that they were running. I mean, it kind of feels like if they're running that, like they could be running a shit. They're probably running a ton of things, right? Like they must, they got to have their hands in some Bitcoin things. That should be a wake up call for people. You have any thoughts there?
Say that again. Sorry.
They have this, you know, we found out the FBI, they finally admitted that they were running this encrypted phone network, ANOM, right? Where they were just intercepting every message that the organized crime was sending was just going to them.
Oh, you're saying backdoor. You gotta have some Bitcoin operation going on.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't know. I feel like they could be running some wallets.
I mean, definitely some custodial wallets, some software that connects to servers they own. You know what I mean? Like software that doesn't let you hit or connect your own node. You know, custodial mixing services would be a clear one, as they could piece together the entire history. Yeah, freaks. I mean, you got to be vigilant out there. You know, if something sounds too good to be true, it probably is. You know, these centralized services are definitely prime suspects to be honeypots. And, you know, any software that's closed source, right, that you can't verify, you can't build yourself, you can't connect to your own node, someone else is seeing your transactions, these are all prime suspects to be operated by the FBI. I'm not saying that they are for sure, but, you know, chances are there's got to be a couple that the FBI are running for sure.
Like that applies to like every iPhone app, closed source things.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
I mean, because you can have an open source iPhone app, you just can't verify that. You can't verify that it's the same code that's running.
Absolutely. Who knows? Like, I provide Zeus open source, right? And you could build it yourself and put it onto your own phone. But who's to say that Apple is not piecing it together behind the scenes and putting out a version that
can you build it yourself and run it on an iPhone?
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, if I'm using it on the iPhone, I'm using a version I built, but. You know, I recommend the freaks that go out and use Android and use the verified builds that either F-Droid builds or build it themselves or use the binary I have in sign, but only if you trust me. Otherwise, just build it yourself. iOS, you know, it's sort of hard to get around that. You're sort of screwed one way or the other.
I mean, unless you're going line by line, building it yourself, I guess it does increase, it improves the trust profile. It improves the trust profile.
Do that either, going line by line, so it's tricky. Right. Yeah.
So ultimately, you're trusting the maintainer to a degree, obviously.
Yeah,
It's better if you have a signed build or you build it yourself. But it is what it is. But these like auto updatable apps that are like you can't verify at all on iPhone. Like they could easily probably just serve someone. That doesn't have to be the whole app either, right? They could just serve you. They could serve you a malicious update, just a single person, if you're on iPhone or Android, even on Google Play, right? If you have auto updates enabled,
for sure. Yeah, man. I mean, end of the day, these platforms, they have a lot of rooms for back doors. You know, like something like iMessage, right? It's not like Signal where. You know, you create a new key and everyone gets notified you changed it. Like, this is a system built to add new devices to it and share the keys. Like, Apple controls the whole thing. They could just add a device to that belongs to the FBI to your profile, have it coded so that it doesn't send you a notification that you added it. And all of a sudden, they have a copy of all your messages, just like the FBI global ANOM sting. You know what I mean?
I would just point out to the freaks that, like, when you're talking about threat models, you know, the FBI, the NSA, Chinese Special Service, the Russian Special Service, like, these are the most sophisticated actors in the world. Okay? So I don't want you to get overwhelmed because you can't secure yourself from them. You know, 99% of the world can't secure themselves from them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you have to plan your threat model appropriately. And that's why we like cold storage, because if you just don't have your keys online, you reduce the overwhelming majority of risk. It has to be local. And if you use, when we're talking about actionable discussion here, if you use, you know, cold storage multi-sig located in different geographies, different areas, then they an attacker physically has to go to those locations, those multiple different locations to access it. If you're using things on your keys, like the timer feature on Cold Cart, where once you enter the PIN, you have to wait a week before you're able to access the key. Things like that can reduce your attack surface very, very easily without overcomplicating things. And because once you start overcomplicating things, you end up presumably shooting yourself in the foot. Most Bitcoin is lost because of user error, because you get too complicated, because you start fucking things up. But the single biggest thing you can do is just never connect your keys to the internet. If your keys are never on the internet, then, you know, 9 times out of 10, the only way they're able to access them, the only way an attacker is able to access them is to come in and actually take your keys from the device. You know, they have to come into a physical location to take them. We had Craig Raw on the show. I really want to get him back on. And he said the single biggest thing for multisig to him, because he's from South Africa, there's tons of crime down there. There's tons of burglaries. The single biggest thing is that someone can't come into his home with a gun and take his keys. Because they're located in geographically distributed areas. Now, unfortunately, if someone's a deranged criminal and they come in and they don't believe that you have multisig, they might do a lot of damage to you. So really where I want to see this go is I want to see the assumption be made that so many Bitcoiners are using geographically distributed multisig that attackers just assume, they just assume before they come in that the majority of your funds are in that kind of setup. Similar to like an ADT sign or some kind of alarm system sign that we see on people's lawns, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It would be funny if Rodolfo started producing some signs like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Geographically distributed multisig lives here. But actually right now it'd be bad because just so few Bitcoiners that it would literally be a sign that's like, I'm a Bitcoiner. Maybe that's a thought for after hyper-Bitcoinization. And then last but not least, the last topic I wanted to get you with before you leave us is, did you see this new trust minimized VPN that Apple released? I think they're calling it Private Relay.
Yeah, so I saw the headline, but I did not dive into the specifics of it. It's intriguing to say the least, but just like any VPN, I worry about Apple having this network visibility into what all their Safari users are doing. So I'd really need to be swayed to trust it for anything serious. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, I mean, with Apple, a lot of times it just feels like they're virtue signaling.
Mm-hmm.
But also sometimes it feels like, I mean, look, the threat model they have for their customers is like not to protect them from themselves. Not to protect them from Apple, you know, themselves being from Apple's perspective, or the U.S. government, but to protect them from everyone else. The exception, of course, being that they like co-own Chinese iCloud servers with the Chinese government, so China doesn't have to give them a warrant or anything to access it. They can just go in themselves. So they're like, oh, the Chinese government hasn't given us information requests. Yeah, because the Chinese government just has straight access to it, so they didn't even have to ask Apple for it. So that's like, you know, one hand says one thing, the other hand's like scratching the CCP's back. But in the case of this, I mean, obviously it's not open source. There's no way for us to really trust Apple's claims. But the idea is basically every connection that goes out goes to two independent servers. So Apple, I guess, controls one. I guess Apple controls both, but the second server doesn't know what the first server is saying to itself. The first server is doing some kind of obfuscation so that the second server doesn't know. Ideally, to me, it would seem like it should be run by two independent companies. So both mm-hmm. companies would have to collude. And that's something we see with Unchained Capital with their multisig setup for their loan product, where like you hold one key, they hold one key, and an authorized third party holds the third key. So those two parties have to collude against you to basically attack you, which is also kind of like what we were talking about with the custodial mixers, chaining them together, right? If you chain them together, then they have to collude.
Similar to like if you use VPNs chained together from different countries, you'd get an effect like that.
Right. Yeah. So the Apple fanboy response to this is amazing. I'm not an Apple fanboy, but this is what an Apple fanboy would say. This is amazing. Just more proof that Apple really cares about their customers' privacy, and it's the best for privacy. And then like the cypherpunk or hardcore Bitcoiner look would be, you know, this is closed source. There's no way for us to verify their claims. Apple's probably full of shit. iCloud isn't end-to-end encrypted, and most users think it's end-to-end encrypted, and they back up their whole phones to it, and Apple's malicious, and users should use Tor. But there's a middle ground here, and that is that, you know, when you use a VPN like a Molvad or a Bole or one of the horrible ones, all the other horrible ones that exist, you're completely trusting that provider, right? And it'd be kind of cool if this seems like, I mean, if it's actually what's happening in the background, because there's no way for me to verify it, it seems like a strictly, it's inferior to Tor from a privacy perspective, but it seems strictly superior to a traditional hosted VPN, where you're just completely trusting them with all your traffic. It would be kind of cool to see some of the, you know, more reputable VPNs like kind of team up together to make it the default setup for their customers. You know, like if Molvad and Bole, you know, they're both accept Bitcoin, they both have good reputations. If they set it up so the default is every time you do a connection, it goes through, you know, Molvad first, and then it goes through Bole, and you need to basically have them collude to de-anonymize you. That could be a massive trust improvement for people while still having the bandwidth improvements of using a VPN over something like Tor, right? Like the main benefit of using a VPN over Tor is like you just get significantly better speeds.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. While that setup would be interesting to see, it would be also really hard to verify. And you know, ultimately, end of the day, you're still trusting Apple, right? Like this is a company who's gone so far as to disable the encryption on their iCloud backups to have a way to access those messages, for the FBI to access those messages in, you know, different domestic situations. So it's even with this intricate setup, we can't verify it. We can't know for sure. And if privacy on this level is important to you while still maintaining speed, you might want to try to link together VPNs yourself manually across different countries, across different jurisdictions, and create your own threat profile for these VPN providers. Because ultimately, this sort of thing on paper sounds great, but at the end of the day, it can just be like window dressing, you know, like.
What about this? So I like one of my favorite parts of Dispatch is just brainstorming live on air. So what if like you got, if you made an app, you, Evan Kaloudis, you made an open source app.
That's an idea.
And then you reached out to five or six of the largest VPN providers or the best VPN providers that you curate. You decide the other six best, right? Mm-hmm. And you tell them, look, I want you to accept Bitcoin payments. Maybe a couple of them already do, right? So you obviously pick those. I want you to accept Bitcoin payments and I need you to give me an open API that I can hook into. And then your app randomly, every time you want to use it, you pay it with Lightning and it picks two random ones and like chains you through them automatically. Something like that.
That's intriguing. Would I even necessarily need to get those providers on board? I could just do it myself and be a proxy. But then you're trusting me, right?
Right. And then you're like, there's a custodial money relationship there. But if it's Lightning, you can just automatically just split it between where you go. And then you could take a cut as the software provider. Mm-hmm. So literally every member of that group is like basically has a profit incentive to have it, you know, work well. And then no individual provider knows who they're paired with. Like there, maybe you even do three. You almost do like a Tor onion, but the software is just automatically routing you through the different VPN providers while paying everyone.
That is an intriguing idea. Huh. And of course, we're going to tie in Lightning.
It's, you know, yeah, obviously we got to stay on topic here.
The hour or half hour, whatever makes the most sense. But I mean, as far as things go on that front, yeah, there's tons of room for innovation. And I think it would definitely be an intriguing product on today's market. I mean, a lot of people say that users don't care about privacy, right? But I don't think that's exactly the case, as shown by your audience and by even corporations, by Apple, trying to pander and provide these privacy features. It's just that these guys shouldn't be the ones doing it, given their track record.
Yeah, I would say, like, it is the coolest part about, I don't trust Apple for shit, but the coolest part about them selling this privacy as a premium thing is that it is kind of creating, it is, first of all, showing that there's a market there for people who care about easy to use privacy. Mm-hmm. And it's almost signaling to the rest of the industry that there's a market there, even if there's not as big of a market as people think there is, which kind of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? So it'd be nice to see more and more companies kind of realizing that this is a value add, this is a way they can attract customers, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as time goes on and there are more incidents relating to privacy, the demand is just going to go up and up. So I think the important thing is that people make products that make it easy and accessible. And, you know, while it's, I wouldn't trust them, it is cool to see Apple trying to build products or at least market them in the field of privacy. So it is 100%. Cool to see.
So Evan, I think we're going to wrap this up. Do you have any things you want to cover before we do?
Oh man, I'm just beat from this week. I just want to say shouts to all the freaks listening today. Shouts to all the amazing Bitcoiners I got to hang out with and meet this past week. I don't think I've ever been more bullish. And exactly. It's just crazy to see that everyone else that I'm talking to is so incredibly bearish. I can't help but think that this is an incredible time to accumulate.
100% co-sign everything Evan said. Evan, thank you for coming on the show. I know we're both extremely drained, so I do appreciate you helping me continue this streak. I appreciate all the freaks that are here. I appreciate all the freaks I met. I want to remind the freaks that next week on Bitcoin Tuesday, 1900 UTC, we're going to have Battle of the Nodes. We're going to have the teams from Noddle, Ronin, Raspi Blitz, Start9, and my node there. Umbral has not confirmed yet, so if you want to see them in the show, please reach out to them and tell them as a customer you would love to see that. To the rest of you, we'll see you at RHR on Thursday. I love you all. Like, stop being pussies. Bitcoin is doing great, and we're gonna fucking win.
We're gonna win, freaks. Let's go. Regulators.
We regulate any stealing of his property. We're damn good, too. But you can't be any geek off the street. Gotta be handy with the steel, if you know what I mean. Earn your keep.
Regulators! Mount up! It was a clear black night, a clear white moon. Warren G was on the streets, trying to consume some skirts for the eve, so I could get some phones rolling in my ride. Chillin' all alone.
Just hit the east side of the LBC on a mission trying to find Mr. Warren G. Seen a car full of girls, ain't no need to tweak. All of you search, know what's up with 213.
So I hooked a left on 21 and Lewis. Some brothers shooting dice, so I said, let's do this. I jumped out the rock and said, what's up? Some brothers pulled some heat, so I said, I'm stuck.
Since these girls peeping me, I'm on glide and swerve. These looking so hard, they straight hit the curve. Want to bigger, better things than some horny tricks. I see my homie and some suckers all in his mix.
I'm getting jacked, I'm breaking myself. I can't believe they taking Warren's wealth. They took my rings, they took my Rolex. I looked at the brother, said, damn, what's next?
They got my homie hemmed up and they all around. Can't none of them see him if they going straight down for pound. They wanna come up real quick before they start to clown. I best pull out my and lay them busters down.
They got guns to my head, I think I'm going down. I can't believe it's happening in my own town. I would fly, let me contemplate. I glance in the cut and I see my homie Nate.
16 in the and one in the hole. Nate Dogg is about to make somebody's turn. Now they dropping and yelling, it's a tad bit late. Nate Dogg and Warren G had to regulate. I laid all them busters down, I let my
explode. Now I'm switching my mind back into freak mode. If you won't skirt, sit back and observe. I just left a gang of over there on the curb.
Now they got the freaks, and that's a known fact. Before I got jacked, I was on the same track. Back up, cause it's on N-A-T-E and me. The woman to the G.
Just like I thought, they were in the same spot. In need of some desperate help. But Nate Dogg and the G-Child were in need of something else. One of them names was sexy as hell. I said, ooh, I like your size. She said my chords broke down and just sing real nice. Would you let me ride? I got a car full of girls and it's going real swell. The next stop is the East Side.
Love your freaks. I'll see you Thursday for RHR and next Tuesday for the Battle of the Nodes. Stay humble and stack sets.